Prater this time puts a little more air under it, and this drives him back further in the end zone. 8 yards out. He's coming out left, angling to the 5, to the 10. Gets a block on the outside to the 20. Another block to the 30, to the 35, 40, and knocked out of bounds on the far side of the field. Bears are going to start this drive in Lions territory. Some terrific blocking along the way. Bunch sent left, and Cohen in motion. Snap, Trubisky throws the slant right. Robinson's in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Bears! A well-executed drive puts the Bears in front. 10 yards on the touchdown to Allen Robinson, his fifth of the year. And how about that? A first quarter touchdown for the Bears in the lead. Corners up tight on the edges as Blau takes the snap against a four-man rush. And now Max coming strong. Pocket starts to throw. Down the field, open over the back of the cover. To the 30, to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone, and the touchdown. Touchdown Lions to Kenny Golladay. St. Rita product goes 75 yards on third down and 10. Blau never will throw an easier pass and completion to a wide receiver streaking free. Blau in the gun, Scarborough to his left, takes the snap. Pocket's nice, throwing to a wide open man inside the 5, left into the end zone for the easy stand-up touchdown for the Lions. It's Marvin Jones. 8-yard touchdown throw from the quarterback Blau, and Jones with his 9th touchdown of the year. The Lions lead it 13-7. Muehlbach to be on the ball and set it back. Sam Martin is the spotter. Snap and placement. Prater bangs it through. It is 17-7 Lions. First indoor game in the career of Eddie Pinheiro. Snap and placement. Here's the boot from 30 yards. It is up, but it's good. So the Bears do squeeze out a field goal out of the drive. And they make it 17-10 Lions. Running back next to Trubisky. They fake the handoff. He quickly rifles, throws in, picked up on the far side of the field. And it's the Lions up with a football, running all the way to the near side. And knocking down Darius Slay as Anthony Miller and the Lions have taken the ball away from the Bears on a throw out to the right side. An 18-yard return for Slay. Mitch fakes the toss to Cohen. Lobs it to Horsted. Over the shoulder. Catch for the touchdown. Touchdown, Bears! Beautifully executed play call. And the rookie, the Ivy Leaguer, with his first NFL touchdown on Will Harris of Boston College. Perfectly placed over the shoulder. Concentration. Hopefully the replay won't wipe it out. 24-yard try. Snap is down by Martin. The kick up by Prater. Rifles it through. It is good. The Lions are back in front. 20-17. Snap back to Trubisky. Looking to throw over the middle. End zone. Touchdown. He uncovered David Montgomery for 6. The Bears have the lead. A 3-yard toss with 2:17 left. Bears are back in front, 23-20. Snap back on 4th and 22. Kwiatkowski comes, puts the pressure, lobs it up. Playing center field and swiping the ball is Eddie Jackson. He takes it away. Fade to black. 29 seconds to go. And the Bears have turned away the Lions. And any bid for a dramatic, magical finish by the Lions.
Nick Shepkowski and Arthur Arkish on 670 The Score.
Good morning. That's how you heard it yesterday. Happy Thanksgiving, a day late to all. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It's a built for tough Bears Monday on a Friday. Nick Shepkowski, Arthur Arkish in Mullion Hall this morning. Good evening, as always. 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call. As for the next 4 hours, there's a Bears game, and hey, they might only be 500, but there's a month to go, and there's still technically meaningful football still to be played. What's going on, Arthur?
Yeah, appreciate you filling in. I know we had a last-second change. Hub Arkish a little under the weather, so we really do appreciate you pinch-hitting, especially on the holiday weekend and especially this early in the morning. There's a Bears victory to break down. That makes it, you know, probably a little bit easier. And as you said, meaningful football, well, at least for one more week. You got the Dallas Cowboys also at 6-6. We'll be coming to Soldier Field Thursday night. I'm sure we'll talk plenty about that one. I'm sure we'll talk plenty about one of Mitch Trubisky's better days as a pro. Another uneven coaching performance. But, hey, all that matters is they were able to gut out a victory and, as you said, keep this thing interesting hopefully through December.
Yeah, we'll see how long into December it lasts. But you go into December at 6-6, and it's a win. Is it a franchise-changing, quarterback future-changing win? I think some of the exaggerations and the excitement that come off of yesterday are a little bit extreme, but you saw Mitch Trubisky respond, and you had him play as good a football as he's played all year long, in a moment that mattered as much as any moment has so far this year. And I think that you put it nicely before the show, saying how exciting of football it was and how much different of a change it has been compared to what you've watched for 12 weeks so far this season.
Yeah, I'm still trying to kind of figure out, sort of reconcile if that is more a statement on the first 11 games or if that really is a byproduct of how exciting that was in the second half at Ford Field yesterday. But I said it, I'm sticking with it. It's as most fun as I've had covering a game this season. And again, this is against a bad 3-8 and 1 Detroit Lions team. And it was ugly at halftime. The Bears were not feeling so good about themselves. Some of the usual mistakes, a 1st and 32 sprinkled in there after 3 penalties on a drive. You had drops, you had some issues going on, but I think it does speak to this team's character a little bit, even against a bad football team. Like the Lions, to stick with it, for Mitch to overcome the rough end of the first half with that curious scramble in the red zone that leads to a field goal instead of a potential touchdown, to bounce back after the interception on the first series of the second half and then deliver 2 of his better drives as a pro, have the defense do just enough, and again, have win number 6 to be discussing.
That's Arthur Arkish. I'm Nick Szepkowski. If you want to chime in on the conversation, 312-644-6767, your number to call. Coming up today, 7 a.m. this morning, Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports is going to break down what he saw and watched with us yesterday. 7:40, Zach Shaw, huge game in college football here in the Midwest. Coming up tomorrow, Michigan taking on Ohio State. He covers the Wolverines for 24/7 Sports. He'll join us just before 8 o'clock. And then Mark Potash from the Chicago Sun-Times right around 8 o'clock as well. We'll take your telephone calls throughout the morning. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages coming in as well. 67011 is where you go to send those also here this morning. It is a Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Friday. You're listening to a Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Friday on 670 The Score. And we give Matt Nagy a lot of grief over play calling, play designs, a lot of the run-pass ratio is what we've looked at time and time again this year. And oh my God, he plays against Green Bay and he doesn't run the ball more than 6 or 7 times and they're only down by 3 or 7 points the entire afternoon or evening. How can he possibly do that? I want to look across the field, look to the other sideline, and just say how thankful I am that Matt Patricia and the amount of man that he continued to run and allowed Anthony Miller to play what was by far his best game as a pro yesterday, that just allowed that to become a thing. And hey, tip of the cap to you, Matt Patricia. I'll sit up straight in your press conferences. I'll make sure that you're comfortable and everything. But I'm just happy to see that part of it. Matt Nagy not being the guy that sticks with his plan too much into a fault yesterday.
Yeah, maybe they both did a little bit. It was about as good as David Montgomery has looked. I think he still ended up with about 16 carries. But, you know, obviously don't worry about that run-pass imbalance as much with a victory. Shep, I think it's an astute point, no doubt about it. We saw just a few weeks ago what that Lions defense was unable to do against Mitch playing exclusively man coverage at Soldier Field, of course. And Mitch has just been tearing up the Lions. I think 3 touchdowns and 3 consecutive outings against Patricia's Lions. Matt Nagy now 4-0 against Matt Patricia's Lions and 8-2 in the NFC North, guys, for, again, all the other things we want to knock him for, and a lot of them are well-deserved. He's been taking care of business in the division, and, you know, it kind of does start there. So, but, yeah, as far as the man coverage goes, I mean, I sort of get it only because you pay these, you know, you've got your high-priced corners in Darius Slay and you give Justin Coleman the big bucks in the offseason thinking he's going to be up to the challenge. And he was earlier in the game. You didn't see Anthony Miller really start to go off, you know, fully anyway until the huge 3rd and 4 catch down the right sideline after the Allen Robinson drop, and then he comes back on the other side of the field. So, you know, it's funny, Matt Nagy actually in his postgame presser, the first thing he wanted to do was give credit to Matt Patricia and to Daryl Bevel and to David Blau, of course. But I'm kind of now rethinking it in sort of a different context with you mentioning this, and he was probably also sort of thankful that Patricia perhaps made things a little easier than he had to on Mitch, because if there is a book on Mitch at this point, and frankly, there is one. You know, in it is that some of his fleeting success has come against man, and the Lions didn't really want to back down from that approach.
Yeah, and that was I thought that was part of yesterday, but no, you have to give credit to the players too. Like, yes, Mitch, we could sit here and say that, oh yeah, it's just man, and he takes advantage of man, and he has trouble reading zones and throwing into zones. He went and he made plays yesterday, yeah. And it can be against the Lions, and I get it, the Lions, and that's a team that is fading like Detroit tends to do, oh, for the last 50 or 60 years or so in their history, but it still is a game that he went and he played as well as he's played all year, and I'm not saying that it's changing anything. I'm not saying that, going into next year's season, it's only Mitch Trubisky, and there's no other person to consider. There's no veteran to bring in or anything. But it's just, it is a nice, if you're going to sit and rip the guy and tear him to shreds when he's bad, and Lord knows there's been plenty of chances for that this season, it is just nice to see and throw some feathers in the cap of Mitch Trubisky for showing up yesterday.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I don't think that narrative is going to do a total 180 to where you're thinking, or at least we're thinking, that Mitch is, under any scenario, frankly, going to enter 2020 as sort of this unquestioned starter. We'll see. We haven't heard from Ryan Pace, and I will say one of my takeaways yesterday in that postgame presser with Matt Nagy too, and granted it's coming off the huge win, but that sounds like a guy who still has the ultimate faith in Mitch Trubisky. So I thought that was kind of telling as well. I mean, again, after one of his better pro performances, that's probably the tone you would expect him to strike. But there was no wavering, anyway, when it came to Mitch yesterday. And like you said, I mean, it was, he had mentioned during the week how much he missed the opportunity to get to play on Thanksgiving last year and how much he was relishing this, and for him to deliver and for him to be able to overcome a few of those earlier mistakes and, get the explosive plays down the field that have really, been lacking for this Bears offense all season. To just stand tall and make those throws when he had to. It was a good sign, and now with some better defenses looming, if he can, you know, stack some more solid performances together, maybe you're at least feeling better about things. Again, there's a lot of football left to play, and when we were saying that 24 hours ago, you could barely say it without just feeling awful about the fact there was a lot of football left to play. Well, now things are going to remain interesting, at least for the time being.
Yeah, at least for the time being, at least for another week with a Dallas team that, if you are a believer in getting teams at the right time, that is a Dallas team that scored, one offensive touchdown in the last 2 weeks. You still have to, they have to go on the road to play the Bears next week. You know, Mitch Trubisky has to play against a good defense that Dallas presents in itself, but Dallas has to come here and play against a respectable defense that settled down nicely yesterday. 312-644-6767, your number to call. It's Nick Shepkowski and Arthur Arkish in for Mully and Haw on this Bears Monday on a Friday, brought to you by Built Ford Tough. Bears Monday, Friday on the Score. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages as well, 67011. Where you go to get those, as there was a player yesterday that he has had highs this year. I thought he started his first game of the year, was very strong, and then he had a weird off-the-field thing that was just bizarre, and yesterday he was a megastar. Roquan Smith, outside of the 15-yard penalty that he just didn't slow down in time, and he ended up getting the personal foul for, he played about as perfect a football game as you're going to see Roquan Smith play.
I'm with you on that, and he's now been stacking some solid performances together when they've needed him to, with Danny Trevathan out, obviously. Mm-hmm. This dates back to his play in L.A., which wasn't perfect but was pretty solid, and has been able to kind of span that, or has been able to kind of stack those together. I actually asked Roquan in the postgame locker room, the tiny postgame locker room at Ford Field. It was as tight of confines as really you will see anywhere. But
is it really?
Yeah, it's tough to get around.
That's it, like, was. I mean, it's only what 20? Not even 20 years old, is it?
Kind of hard to figure, right?
Right.
When we were in LA a few weeks ago, and that's a super old stadium, the Coliseum. They actually had to bring the players out into the tunnel. And you'd actually think maybe they want to start doing that at Ford Field too, because it's just impossible to kind of navigate in there. Anyway, I'm obviously digressing. I asked Roquan about that personal foul. He said he didn't agree with it. It looked like, I mean, his back was pretty much toward the sideline at that point, and it looked to me like he just lost his spot on the field, didn't quite know how much space he had left to go. I thought it was a relatively easy call, so, I mean, I agreed with it, but Smith was pretty adamant he didn't agree with the call. Either way, for him to be able to get home a few plays, I don't remember if it was the next play, but to obviously get that huge huge third down sack for Chuck Pagano to dial up that double A-gap blitz, I thought was good too. Pagano maybe could have been a little aggressive a little bit sooner with a rookie quarterback, but nonetheless, to get that timely blitz call and to get Roquan home on it, and then, of course, Eddie Jackson with the sealer, his first interception of the season on the next play. Good signs for both of these guys. But, yeah, Roquan in particular, look, we'll probably never know what happened earlier in the season with his personal issues, and we've respected that, and you don't want to pry too much. And it seems like hopefully it's kind of water under the bridge at this point. That was the other part of it, is he's getting back to looking like Roquan on the field, and I feel like he's kind of getting back to sounding a little bit more like Roquan off the field too. And I don't want to play, you know, amateur psychologist or anything. I have no idea what was going on, but it just kind of, you get that feel, certainly off a win like yesterday. And again, we can talk all about Mitch, and I'm sure we will plenty over the next 3.5+ hours, whatever it is. But Roquan Smith is going to be the quarterback of this defense. And if Khalil Mack isn't there, he's the face of this defense. So, what he is able to do in finding improvements after what was really a rough, start to his second season, the importance of it can't be understated here either, I don't believe.
That's Arthur Arkish. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. We take your text messages as well. 67011 before Eric Edholm joins us at 7 o'clock this morning. You're listening to a Built for Tough Bears Monday on a Friday on 670, The Score.
That right there, when you see those and you see the ball go up, and you see the touch, because not every throw is going to be a what we call a one throw where it's a laser, or a three throw where it's real high. It was that two ball. And you have to have touch. It can't be underthrown, especially the one to Jesper. And then the third down's to Anthony. It's big for building confidence for him with those guys. And in 17, Anthony Miller, you're feeling him the last 2 weeks. He's getting opportunities and he's making the most of it.
That's the voice of Matt Nagy. Welcome back in. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski and Arthur Arkish with you until 9 a.m. today on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. As he discusses, does Matt Nagy, one of the big stars of yesterday, played his best game as a pro, no doubt about it. He's talking about Anthony Miller and mentions the last 2 weeks of Anthony Miller coming around and looking like that second round draft pick that the Bears traded up for before last season's draft. And it's great. It's better that he does this than doesn't do it when I say this. But how much of that is just a result of it being, the Detroit Lions or the New York Giants, who both have had defenses that leave, let's put it nicely, a little to be desired, right, on both of those units this year? How much of it is that? How much of it is Miller really coming into his own?
I think it's actually more the latter, only because I don't think that Miller's issues have really been with the opposition so much as he's been battling himself and some of the mental mistakes. And even in the first half yesterday, we mentioned, I don't remember if we mentioned or if I was mentioning on the podcast before I got on the air, but the illegal formation coming out of the timeout, that's inexcusible, obviously. That is a really bad look for both
Miller. I couldn't believe that.
And his coaches.
That
right.
part, and they could have called the delay a game if they wanted to.
Right.
Like, it was that. Play clock was at zero for a good, it looked like 2 seconds, at least on the TV,
yep,
of that. And it's like, out of a timeout? Really? That's what you've got? Come on.
Still not the cleanest operation by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel like those are the type of mental mistakes and maybe illustrative of a lack of focus at times that have kind of, you know, have affected Miller more than anyone shutting him down. I mean, he's just such a dynamic talent. His ability to separate and to make plays. And, you think back to his rookie season, of course, the Bears trade their second rounder this year to move up and I think get him at 51 overall. And he plays through the shoulder injury. He still has the 7 touchdowns. But other than the touchdowns, the numbers aren't all that impressive. And part of the reason they're not all that impressive is because no one was overthrown more last year on deep balls by Mitch than Miller. He was getting open often and that connection wasn't really firing yet. Frankly, it hadn't been firing yet, at least consistently, through the first 11 games. And that's what made, you know, those two big third down conversions. He had a couple, I think he had another 20-yard catch at some point yesterday. That's what made it so exciting. And again, yeah, the Lions are a bad football team, a bad defense led by a defensive-minded expert, much like up until yesterday, at least, we were saying this is a bad Bears offense. And it's still a bad Bears offense. You need to do it more than once. Small sample size alert. I'm not getting carried away here. They need to sustain some of the success. But I just mentioned, of course, Matt Nagy, the offensive mastermind who's struggled with his unit. With all that being said, again, Justin Coleman got paid a bunch of money and has been viewed largely as one of the better slot corners in the league this season. So for Miller to win in man on those routes, I think that says more about what he was able to do, the way he was able to overcome his first half struggles. And again, this wasn't just in a vacuum. He was coming off the really big game against the Giants, as you said, I think was fairly productive the week before, too. So his best three-game stretch as a pro. And now a chance to build on a little bit. I got to go back and look a little bit closer because I was driving home from Detroit yesterday, but I saw Cole Beasley went off against Dallas. Cole Beasley does a lot of his work from the slot. So whatever the Cowboys had going on there yesterday against their former receiver, that wasn't working. We'll go back and look what Julian Edelman did a couple weeks ago. But basically what I'm getting at is the matchup going to be, is it going to be promising for Miller to kind of build on what he's been doing? And I think there's a chance it will become this week.
That's Arthur Arkish. I'm Nick Shepkowski. This hour brought to you by Exergen Temporal Scanner. Is your family ready for cold and flu season? Knowing when it's a flu lets you know when to call your doctor. The flu brings a fever, so be prepared with a thermometer you can trust. The Exergen Temporal Scanner, backed by more than 70 clinical studies. 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call. Text messages flowing in as well. We'll read some of those, 67011. We start the conversation, or at least continue it, Northside and Steve, next up on 670 The Score. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, fellas. Hey, what intrigued me, we hit them in the mouth. It was 7-0. But when they got down 23-7, I liked the play calling. And look, if we gotta wear this wild card tag, let's roll with it.
Look, sure. Thank you for the telephone call there, Steve. The Bears fall out to a significant gap yesterday. Did you think that David Bluff played that well?
David Blau. I wouldn't expect you to know. I didn't
Purdue.
Either. I didn't either until late Wednesday night. He played really well early, and I kind of have to have some fun with Joniak. I know on the way, the sound coming into the show, he had mentioned that David Blau will never have an easier throw in the NFL, and I will respectfully disagree. He could be throwing behind the line of scrimmage like a lot of these NFL offenses do now. You all have seen the pop pass touchdowns that some quarterbacks are able to throw as well. So, yes, he had a nice pocket. He had time to deliver that deep ball, but for your first ever pass attempt to go for a 75-yard touchdown and a lot of it to be air yards, I think that's credit to David Blau. And I thought he made some big plays throughout the day. I was impressed with his ability to keep his eyes down the field as he was kind of buying himself extra time. He's not known to be a plus athlete per se, but I thought he was able to kind of at least maneuver the pocket okay. And arm strength didn't appear to be a problem. The moment didn't appear to be too big for him. So, we talked about small sample sizes. Obviously, that's the epitome of that. But I thought he played, under the circumstances, I thought he played pretty well. What'd you think?
I thought he played fine. Like, it was a great start, obviously. Yeah. I mean, for two first quarter touchdowns, and that part was great. I just kind of, as the game went on, it almost got to halftime, and I was like, all right, the Bears aren't going to allow another touchdown. It just kind of felt that way. And then you saw, was it two double moves in the second half? Kyle Fuller got beat on one. I'm trying to remember if the other was early in the or late in the first half. And you saw he made a couple of those throws down the field regardless. And it was like, okay, yes, the moment's not too big for him. It's just the Lions could not complete a drive. My favorite memory of him, though, and Mike Chen will appreciate this. Mike, what's my favorite memory of Mr.?
Oh, come on. You really have to bring this up?
Yes.
All right.
I do, Mr. Ohio State.
Purdue kind of put the hurt down a couple years ago with Blau as the quarterback, essentially ending Ohio State's college football playoff.
That's right. And it's, unfortunately, if Michigan wins yesterday or tomorrow, Ohio State's not assuredly done for their college football playoff run, but we can still hope for that. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. hey, want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and earn $5,000 signing bonus as a result? Visit ChicagoWolves.com for details, then visit the Sprint store in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. December 14th for your chance to win. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages welcome as well, 67011. I just thought it was one of those that the defense seemingly adjusted nicely. I don't know what the heck the deal was, especially on the first touchdown.
Yeah.
I don't know what Prince Amukamara is doing. I don't know if that's an Eddie Jackson problem, Mukamura problem, a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me almost of the Reggie Wayne touchdown in the Super Bowl. Obviously, smaller circumstances with this one,
right.
But it felt like the communication breakdown, that it seemed obvious that guys weren't on the same page and they paid dearly for it.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll be curious to hear what Matt Nagy says about that one today. He wasn't asked in the postgame yesterday. I'm not positive either where the breakdown occurred. I tend to give Prince the benefit of the doubt on this one because we've seen in recent weeks, actually, Eddie having just a couple lapses back there. This was, I believe, the third play of the game. Remember, it's an 11:30 kick. So I'm not making excuses per se.
Throws him off a little bit.
I don't think so, but just the combination of that, and it's Thanksgiving, and you're on the road, and there's the unknown quantity in David Blau. You probably don't even know if he's got the arm strength to get that ball on time and where it needs to be. So I guess I kind of give them just a little bit of leniency on that, only because especially the way they were able to bounce back, as you alluded to. And I do agree, Blau, I think it was either third or the fourth drive that he had a chance to move the chains to keep the drive going, and he threw behind Danny Amendola. It looked actually at the time like it was a drop. Then you watch it in replay, and clearly the ball wasn't where it needed to be. And yeah, I thought as the game wore on and as the Bears got a little bit more familiar with what he was doing, it did seem like his accuracy waned, and I'm sure that was a combination of things, the way the defense was playing him, and maybe him just starting to realize a little bit what stage he was on and what defense he was playing against, perhaps. But I don't think he was necessarily the reason they lost yesterday either.
No, I don't think so. By any stretch of the imagination, you're able to put 20 points on the board at home against that team. You figure that your defense will get a stop at some point, or at least enough stops in the second half. And was not the case, and it's not what you probably thought when you saw the Bears offense going against a defensive mastermind in Matt Patricia, but that's what you leave with, at least with the Bears being 6-6 now.
Yeah, and just weird, too. I mean, it bears repeating. Matthew Stafford had started, I believe, 136 consecutive games heading into Week 10 at Soldier Field. For the Bears to get two quarterbacks, not Matthew Stafford, against the Lions in the span of less than 3 weeks, that's pretty stunning. I mean, he had an Iron Man reputation, and I assume he's going to be back leading them next year, but who knows? I mean, I don't know if Matt Patricia is going to be back. There's going to be some form of changes there, I would imagine, even if they are still playing hard for him down the stretch here, because obviously that thing has not gone according to plan, and again, defense is his background, and that defense has consistently failed them this season.
On that point, real fast before we take a timeout, and I know he didn't play yesterday, but what is Matt Stafford's legacy in Detroit? Because it's, yes, always available until this year, maybe his rookie year. I think he had the shoulder injury, if I remember correctly.
Either shoulder or knee, maybe. I can't recall. He did, I think he started right out of the gate. His second year as a starter was cut short by one of those injuries, and then he hadn't really missed any time since. So.
Because it feels almost to me like it's like a very mini version of Dan Fouts. Oh, Dan Fouts never got to a Super Bowl. He wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, Matt Stafford's never won a playoff game, but you look at his stat lines year after year after year, and it's just, my God. I know we live in the fantasy football era where numbers mean so much more than maybe they did traditionally, but it's just, God, big time compiler, but I've never thought of him as like, yep, that's one of the truly best in the game.
Right. Well, you certainly need some playoff success, I think, to sort of enter that realm, whether, fair or not. I think a lot of it has been a failure to surround him, and I think his legacy is at least shaping up toward being, a really tough dude with one of the absolute best arms in the game, a guy who can make a lot of plays, but just for whatever reason, didn't win a lot of. Well, and he can't even really say win a lot of the big games because he's come up big in fourth quarters too. That's part of his reputation too. So, maybe the legacy is kind of on the failure on the Lions' behalf to do enough for him. That's kind of what I'm feeling.
Yeah, it seems very Detroit-like, very Lions-like. That's Arthur Arkish. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages welcome as well, 67011. There's a player yesterday that made perhaps the play of the game that we have not mentioned yet so far. We'll touch on that coming up next. It's Arthur Arkish and Nick Szczepkowski in for Mullion Haw on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Blau under center, takes, turns, giving, bouncing right. McKissick, stiff arm on Fuller, and he got him down. He lost his footing, and down he goes. It's a loss on the play of a yard, just enough to trip him up. Thought it was a touchdown.
That play happens relatively early in the fourth quarter of play. Kyle Fuller stepping up, tackling McKissick, and keeping him from not just gaining a first down, but keeping him from the end zone. It seemed like it was, that was a fairly big play in the moment. End up being a huge play by the end of the game. Keep the Lions out of the end zone. Keep it a three-point game instead of a seven-point game. And that's what you saw there. And I immediately thought back to Phil Emery and how proud Phil Emery was on draft day or the day after draft day when Kyle Fuller was picked. And he kept talking about this kid, this cornerback from Virginia Tech. Oh, you got to watch the Georgia Tech tape. You watch this Georgia Tech tape, and this kid jumps off the screen at you. Oh, you can't wait to see him against the run. That was the first thing I thought of, and somewhere today, Phil Emery is smiling because of that game-saving tackle made by Kyle Fuller yesterday.
Was it the inverted safety?
Yes.
I remember something along those lines. Yeah, that's funny to have it jog the Phil Emery memories. Look, I'll tell you, Kyle Fuller is having another heck of a season. He's probably not going to be a first team All Pro again because the Bears, aren't going 12-4 again. And there's a strong correlation between the best teams, unless you're just a standout above your peers. And there's a lot of good corners in the league right now, but he's playing awesome. That was a huge, huge play. Matt Nagy called it the biggest play of the game, a game changer afterward. And as you said, it kept 4 points off the board in a game that the Bears won by four. So pretty awesome. He has been really, really consistent this season. We did have someone on the text screen kind of throwing some shade at Prince saying his career is over. I don't really agree with that assessment at all. Grant, I think we said he struggled a little bit early, and we're not even sure whether he was to blame for that 75-yard touchdown. But he also came up huge. He had a big open field tackle on 3rd and 10 where it looked like it was going to go for a while. I don't remember. The Bears D after the slow start really made every play when it needed to in the moment for the most part. So, but specifically to Kyle Fuller and back to your point, a huge play in a huge spot. And they just talked this week, Chuck Pagano did, about how the Bears have one of the best tackling secondaries in the league. I would agree with that assessment. I mean, I know Buster Skrine missed the tackle late. But other than that, they're pretty solid in that respect yesterday, and nothing epitomizes that more, Shep, than the big one, the clutch play from Fuller.
Yeah, that part was huge, and it was just one of those of, okay, all right, see what the Bears offense is going to do, and then it answered the call as well as it did in the second half, and it's a team win. I think Matt Nagy said that yesterday, but that's how you win games in the NFL. It's not all offense, it's not all defense. At least if you're going to win consistently, it's not going to be just all one-sided like that, and they took advantage of opportunities yesterday, and they walk out victorious and sit 6-6, and they're still technically meaningful football, even if we can debate how meaningful it's going to be and for how long it's going
to
last.
Right, and again, just to not to beat a dead horse here, but the fact that Fuller makes that play at the end of a 70-yard drive that takes like 8-plus minutes off the field right after the Bears' big go-ahead touchdown to Jesper Horsted, we should get into him a little bit more, too, because what a catch that was and what a story that kid has. The converted Princeton wide receiver, the undrafted rookie who wasn't even signed immediately after the draft. He made the team off a rookie minicamp. So a cool story there for Jesper Horsted. But in that moment, I feel like if you're if the Lions are able to punch that one in and, you know, answer with a touchdown after the Bears seem to have some kind of, I don't want to use the word momentum, but kind of have some energy and kind of have their confidence renewed a little bit, you wonder what a big difference that would have made.
No doubt about it. You mentioned Jesper Horsted's touchdown reception, first of his career, and almost like the, I guess it's the NFL equivalent of a walk-on earning a scholarship and then becoming, not maybe not an All-American, but at least being a key contributor. It's at a position, too, that the Bears have been downright just lacking anything this year. Shaheen has not been what Shaheen was supposed to be. He's essentially seems to be an almost healthy scratch of what's going on because of his inability to be a difference maker. And Trey Burton has been, he's been the best rumor in Chicago for the last year and a half, almost 2 years now, of the idea of Trey Burton's great, but the actual execution of the offense with Trey Burton in it is a completely different story. And then all of a sudden here comes this Princeton kid that no one's ever heard of to be pulling down touchdown catches and making big catches a couple weeks here in a row now.
Right. And remember, it was Ben Broniker who had the self-reported concussion coming out of the game last Sunday, along with Taylor Gabriel, also self-reported. And that's interesting. We can hit on that too. Matt Nagy made it a point to say that that's the way those injuries were revealed. And I think that is important, but So Horsted called up from the practice squad 2 weeks ago, makes his first start Thursday, and just an awesome catch. I mean, it was a great throw by Mitch. Horsted had people all over him. Mitch put it where only he was going to be able to get it, and then just the extension and comes up with it. I mean, we saw those ball skills a little bit in the preseason. He had the two leaping touchdown grabs. This is a guy who set Princeton records for receiving touchdowns and catches playing wide receiver. So he's put on a bunch of weight. He's kind of redone his body. Actually, this is an athletic kid. He played baseball at Princeton, too, and had a chance to be drafted. And I guess it kind of – this is kind of a cool anecdote I found out about yesterday. I guess he was letting teams know – that the only way that he was going to eschew a chance at football to play baseball was if someone was able to come with a $500,000 signing bonus. And apparently teams got up to like $350,000 they were going to offer to get him to try and throw his hat in the baseball diamond and not play football, but weren't able to get to $500,000. He said, no, I'm going to give football a shot. He's landed here with the Bears, and he needs to obviously do it for a lot longer too. But I think you see the type of skills that translate at that U tight end position. I don't think you're ever going to ask this guy to win at the point of attack. I mean, that would be doing him a disservice and your mm-hmm. team a disservice, but he's a natural receiver. And again, we saw it a little bit in the preseason, saw it a little bit more Thursday, and obviously those are the types of plays that are going to earn him more chances. Even if he didn't make them, though, as you alluded to, he's going to earn more chances by default because he's pretty much the last tight end left standing.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, you look at this roster of tight ends, and it was the U tight end. You heard so much about it going into last year, heard so much about this year. Oh, Trey Burton, if he's going to be healthy, it's going to be such a big boost to this offense. And it has just been a position of nothing.
Yeah, it has.
Just week in and week out, you're waiting for just give me something, and you've gotten just nothing from that. And of all people to be providing it, I did not have old Jesper on my play sheet yesterday. I did not have it in my picks of him to be the pick to click, if you'll, Hawk Harrelson for a second, to be finding the end zone on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, he's a joy to be around too. Just he's just excited about the opportunity, and he was fun to interview in the post game. And that U position, the adjuster position in Matt Nagy's offense, is as complex as any that isn't quarterback. I mean, that's the toughest position to learn. You'll hear Nagy say it. You'll hear the players say it. So why not get a Princeton guy in there,
right,
on the heels of
exactly
a Harvard guy? I believe the Atlanta Falcons, there was another Ivy League touchdown from a tight end yesterday, and I'll have to go look up the guy's name, but someone from Yale scored for the Atlanta Falcons in the nightcap of the Thanksgiving triple header too. So there's this influx of Ivy League tight ends that are taking the league, but well, no, we won't get carried away here, but good to see for Jesper Horsted and the dude's name who's escaping me in Atlanta.
That's Arthur Arkish. I'm Nick Szepkowski. 312-644-6767 is your number to call. Text messages welcome as well. 67011. We recap a Bears victory 24-20 over the Detroit Lions. on what is a Bears Monday on Friday. Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Friday, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Built Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. Text messages welcome as well. Reading some of those, 67011 is where you go if you want to send in any of those text messages. Coming up here at the top of the hour, there's a player that, because of the contract that he signed, because of what you deal in draft capital in order to get him, no matter what he does, is always going to be seen in a big-time spotlight. I want to get into the performance of Khalil Mack yesterday, Khalil Mack over the last couple of weeks, and if it is okay, if he's showing up with a lot of zeros on the play, on the stat sheet, if it's still okay, if he is affecting the game other ways, and see how many other ways he is affecting exactly that. We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Nick Szabkowski and Arthur Arkish in for Mullion Haw on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Real good Friday for us. Real good Friday.